cordial welcome to the program that goes behind the news and bring you all the angles to topical stories of the day. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, minority caucus in parliament hit back at government over increment in utility tariffs. What are their reasons? We find out. Woes in MPP exacerbated as party supporters defeat party headquarters over leadership decision to go for early Congress. Is it for the good of the party? And seasoned people of Menakobo refuse to pay tax to the Lower Menakobo Municipal Assembly over failure to conduct district assembly election in the area for a while. But are they justified? Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the discussions by text 0266-677570. 0266-677570. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. We are also live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra and the Bonu FM 96.5 in Tema. After shouting from the rooftop on the restraint put before them by the police from hitting the streets to establish their displeasure on what they described as gross incidents of corruption in the country, today the Progressive People's Party and other pressure groups had the full protection from the police to demonstrate to drum home their call for government to fight corruption. The group, clad in red and waving placards, accused the government for showing ineptitude in the fight against corruption. The Progressive People's Party again faulted the government at the slow pace at which state institutions are implementing the recommendations in the JIDA report. So, did the Progressive People's Party achieve the result it wanted with this demonstration? Ms. Eva Loko is a leading member of the Progressive People's Party and has joined us on the line. Good evening, Madam, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, and how are you?
I'm very well. Did the demonstration achieve the needed results you wanted?
Well, we think it did, because it was a call to action. And it is just to launch a national campaign against corruption. And that was done successfully. So I think that it did achieve its main objective.
Why are you impressed with the number that turned up for the demonstration?
Well, so long as we had people from different backgrounds, people from different parties, people from other, you know, pressure groups, I think that it was okay. Because basically, it's to give people the message, as they say, ring the bell, call everybody around and tell them this is what is happening. And I think that that was achieved effectively. We had people from, you know, non-governmental agencies. We had people from other political parties. We had people who joined us as we were going. We had people from the universities and so on. So I think that the number was okay, especially since it's only the beginning of the campaign.
Well, some of the placards read, "Sack corrupt ministers in government. Corrupt government must stop. Abuse of power is too much. And kill corruption, not Ghanaians." And when you talk about sack corrupt ministers in government, who are those corrupt ministers that you are calling on the president to sack?
Yeah, you see, it's a general call. This is, I think, one of the things that was not very clear. We know that in the government institution, in state institutions, in commissions and so on, there are a lot of different entities in the country where there is corruption. We've heard it on your station, we've seen it in the newspapers. All that we are saying is that anybody who has committed a corrupt act should be dealt with, and dealt with quickly, so that others don't get it into their heads that it is okay to be corrupt. You see, we want the right signal to be sent to everybody who is corrupt. So it doesn't matter whether they're in government, whether they're in the judiciary, whether they're in the ministries, whether they're in the district. they must be dealt with and dealt with quickly and effectively so that it will be a deterrent. Because if you're losing $3 billion as a minimum every year and you don't have street lights and you don't have electricity in all the places and people are drinking bad water, definitely we need this money to develop the country. So it is important to deal with people who are corrupt, get the monies back, and use that to help, you know, develop the country. It's just a very simple, straightforward, you know, message. And I think we made that very clear. This was a demonstration not about party, politics, government, no. It's about Ghana. It is high time that we put to good use what God has given us. Right now, I don't think we are doing that.
Are you then saying that the president or government is not doing enough in the fight against corruption?
Of course, we are not doing enough against corruption. Every day in the newspapers, you are in the media, every day there's something going wrong somewhere. It means that oversight bodies either are not doing their work or they are overstretched. If they are overstretched, we know that 83,000 graduates were produced by the tertiary institutions. Most of them are still looking for jobs. Why can't we give them jobs in these institutions so that they have enough human resource to deal with the job at hand? This is what we should be doing. This is what government should be doing. It is very important that we stop all these rhetoric and finger pointing. And if you are in the Ministry of Education and there's corruption there, you deal with it. It means that government should provide the resources so that that can be dealt with. It's a very simple thing. We have money in Ghana. We are sitting on it. Let us pull it from where all the wrong places it is going. And let's develop our country, each and every one of us.
But look,
so I don't think that it is a matter of I'm doing it or I'm doing it step by step. We have ministries who are attached in specific areas. If it's in the Ministry of Sport, let the ministry deal with it. If they don't have resources, give them the resources. If they need more human beings, recruit the graduates who are unemployed. And let's solve the problem. We can't continue just talking about it and making nice speeches about it. So this campaign today has started, and it will not stop until the corruption is either destroyed completely or at least marginalized to the extent that it does not affect the development of the country.
But looking at the recent JIDA story, when the story broke out, government has taken steps at least to set up an investigative committee. They reviewed the report, rolled out an action plan, and directed the appropriate state institutions to implement the recommendations.
Well, it sounds good, okay? But don't we already have institutions that can deal with it? Why do we need a committee? Why do we need anybody? The report is out. It's saying this has happened. Take it to the right ministry. Take it to the right entity. Take it to the right legislative level. And let it be dealt with. We don't need any committees to do that. People are paid to do specific jobs. Somebody has written a report. That is their job. There are institutions that will take this report and deal with what is in there. Why do we need to set special committee? Look, all these committees, they are part of the reason why a lot of young people don't have jobs. Because if there are a lot of work for the Ministry of, Justice to deal with, recruit. There are lawyers that are hanging around. They don't have chambers. They just finished school. Recruit enough people so that they can get their work done instead of pumping that sitting allowance, monthly fees, food, TNT, into a committee. What are the young people going to do? When will it be their turn to get involved in the decision-making and the development of the country? So please, it's nice to hear that some committee is being set up, but it will not solve the problem. We have too many committees in this country. And when they set up committees, I don't know who is 40 years old in that committee. If they are, then the rest are 40 years plus. What is happening to the 18 to 26, 18 to 35 people? We need real jobs. We don't need committees. So I don't think that that will solve the problem quickly. Now they are going to sit down and study the report. If this is how we are going to stop corruption, corruption will grow wings and fly above our heads and ditch us into some valley. We don't need that.
So what next after this demonstration?
Well, we are coming up with a series of activities. Most of it will be on research and analysis so that we can keep presenting solutions. We are not interested in saying this is wrong, that is wrong, why haven't we? We are going to be proposing solutions over and over again until action is taken by the responsible entity. And once we have done that and the things have been corrupted, I said corrupted, where we are going to, things have been corrected, then of course the campaign will end. But until the corrections are done, until corruption is kicked out, the campaign will go on. Today we have launched it, and it is going to continue until things get changed. And we are talking about structural changes, starting with the constitution. If you build a house and the foundation is weak, that house will never last. So we are saying dig the foundation, fortify it, stop all the conflict of interest, stop the conflict of interest between MP and minister, the conflict of interest between the elections of DC, MCs, and so on. Also separate the AG's department so that they can deal with any government that comes in. If you come and you have a corrupt government, the AG department will treat you without fear or favor because they are not aligned. This is what we are asking for. Dig the foundation, fix it, and then build the house again. That is what we are asking for, because if you don't fix the foundation, anything that we do will just be cosmetic dressing.
We want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
Ezra Loko is the leading member of the Progressive People's Party, and PC Appeal Fori is a leading member of the NPP, who also addressed the Progressive People's Party demonstration. Good evening, Mr. Appeal Fori, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam.
As an anti-corruption crusader, what was the thrust of your message to the demonstrators?
As a matter of fact, I received a formal invitation letter from the PPP. The letter was sent to my party headquarters, and a staff of the headquarters brought it to me to my house. And indeed, I was invited to go and then deliver a solidarity statement at the official launch of the campaign against corruption in Ghana. You know, as a fact, Article 35, Clause 3 of our Constitution says it states that takes steps to eradicate corrupt practice and the abuse of power. It states. So, also, this responsibility is imposed on all Ghanaians, because all Ghanaians constitute the state, and we have to take action to eradicate corrupt practices, because corrupt practices have been inimical for our national interest. So this is what they call me, and I always went to support them, explaining or arguing along with them that the position of Minister of Justice and Attorney General is separated. I quite agree. Because throughout the period I was MP, Attorney General's report, which came to us in Parliament, showing level of corrupt practices perpetrated at the ministries, departments. After the debate on the floor of the House, no action was taken to punish those found to have engaged themselves in corrupt practices. And therefore, the corrupt practices create from bad to worse every passing day. But if the prosecutor to the Attorney General, independent of the executive, to vote in absolute, that's positive. But where is part of the executive? And those who are found to have committed this fraud are mostly from the ministries of federal agencies. Then, it makes sense for that position, the Attorney General to be separated from the Minister of Justice, so that the person can prosecute as and when the matter goes to his position. And that's the only way we'll be able to give effect to Article 35, which compels all of us to eradicate corrupt practices and their abuse of power. So when I went there, I made him know the speech I delivered was centered on this.
So does it mean that you believe that the government is not doing enough in the fight against corruption, or are we not winning the fight against corruption?
The government is doing nothing. This constitution came into being in 1992. Ask yourself, the 8 years royal rule under this constitution, what actions did he take to give effect to Article 35 constitution you have just quoted? What did he do? Before came in for 8 years, don't material, what did he do to give effect to Article 35 constitution? After next came, what did he do? He did nothing. And your mama has come and it's still worse. So as long as we are unable to give effect to Article 35 constitution, there's no hope for this country, because money that must be utilized by the president, by the government, to prosecute programs and activities that will make Ghana a paradise on earth. This is denied the president or denied the government. Then there's no hope. Recently, the Minister of Finance also was crying that there's not enough money. The recent money they received about 74% goes to pay salaries. So if something goes to pay salaries, then what about road construction? The present maintenance of state resources, buildings, and so on. These are simple common funds. Where are they going to get money to pay? So as long as corruption slips from bad to worse every passing day, and we don't take punitive action against those who perpetrate such corrupt practices, I want to tell you that there's no hope for this country, especially for the younger ones.
But then, apart from separating the Ministry of Justice from the Attorney General's department, dealing with corruption, is there anything else that we should do?
Yes, apart from that, Parliament itself also should sit up. You see, what is in operation in Parliament is, if MPP is in government, MPP makes no mistakes. And anything or any bill the MPP will bring on the floor of the House, whether good or bad, whether it's in the interest of Ghana or not, the people will vote for it.
All right.
The same thing if NDC is in power, anything negative about the operations of the government, draw attention to it, that when voting takes place, the person will lose this election.
All right.
So many instances have done. For example, it will surprise me to know that during our time, MPP brought a bill, especially with the gold, export of gold. The bill at Section 29 says, holders of money needs shall retain not less than 20% of the export proceeds in the overseas account.
All right.
Not less than. So when this matter came to Parliament, I read a strong objection to it. That's a little bit of power.
All right.
I said, the phrase not less than is nothing but a very huge opportunity for people to steal it. Because if you take 30%, they are taking not less than 20%. If you take 50%, they are taking not less than 30%.
Wow.
If you take 80 to 90%, they commit no offense. because they are taking not less than. And therefore, instead of using the phrase not less,
zero,
let's make it not more than. So we put a cap on it to prevent them from taking the money, to prevent them from taking fraud.
All right. Mr. Apiofori, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. PC Apiofori is a leading member of the NPP. And we will get back to this story again. We still have to talk to Dr. Evans Agridak, who is a political science lecturer. But moving on to other stories. The minority in parliament has described government justification for the increase in utility tariff as too stale, overflogged, and too ridiculous to believe. At a news conference addressed by the minority spokesperson on water resources, David Oponkusi, said the increment is only the first part of a much larger increment and called on Ghanaians to brace themselves up for higher tariffs. We have been joined on the line by David Oponkusi. Good evening, sir, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you, madam.
Why do you say we should brace ourselves up for additional increase in utility tariffs?
I'm sure that when the PURC came up to make the announcement, they made it clear that this was part of a 150% increase that they had approved. So they had approved a 150% increase. So because they loved us, because they thought about us, because, I mean, for some other reason, they were just doing it in phases, and they are phasing out in the first 79%. Meanwhile, they've not given us a timetable for completing this. So we should be ready. We don't know. We don't have a timetable. We don't know when they're going to do it. At any time, they can slap the balance on us.
Again, you said that the justification by government that the tariff increment was necessary to help build needed infrastructure of utility companies was too stale, too overflowed, and too ridiculous to believe. Can you explain that further?
It sounds ridiculous. If, for example, I own a shop, and I tell you, I want to expand the shop, so because of that, milk, sugar, other commodities, the prices are going up, so I can expand my shop. That is exactly what I'm telling us. When it comes to investments in infrastructure, it's the government which should invest, or if the government can find outside investors, fine. But it's a service you are paying for. You're asking to pay more so you can get money to expand. Now, what it means, give me money so I can expand my business, then you pay for it. So that's very, very ridiculous. That you ask us to pay you so you can expand your business.
But someone will then ask, are Ghanaians not supposed to pay the realistic tariff for utility services?
Yes, we are supposed to pay realistic price for utility services. But let me just dwell on the last reason given. If the cost is 100 Ghana cedis, and that's realistic for the services, but you're now telling me that I need to pay more so you can expand the services. That, for me, that is ridiculous. We can take the other reasons separately, but the reason that, so that we can expand the services means that you want me to pay so I can invest in your business. I'm only paying for services. I'm not investing in your business.
So what is the purpose of this press conference intending to achieve?
If you, at the beginning of the press conference, I said that the tariff increases were due to mismanagement. For example, tariff increases affect everybody. Now, probably we haven't realized this, but it's going to affect prices of commodities. Now, every small-scale industry, every big large-scale industry, every person who is using electricity will have to pass that cost on to the consumer. Now, in most cases, when you slap a huge increase at a go on businesses, small and marginal businesses that are just struggling to survive, these are the people who may go out of business and then throw people back on the street. We have a problem on our hands. So what we are saying is that increases are bound to come. They are natural in every situation. But if you, for example, if you needed to increase tariffs gradually from 2010, for some reason you declined to do that, and 3 years down the line, you slap the compounded increases on the consumer. You are going to kill people's businesses. You are going to lower people's lifestyles and income levels. This is serious. You don't do that in an economy like ours.
Then what do you want government to do to reverse the tariff increases?
Oh, the government is the government. When I say that, I'm speaking politically. You give them a mandate to manage the affairs of this country. You mismanage the affairs of this country. If I had the power, I would just ask the government to resign and give way to proper management of this economy. They may not reverse the increases. We are not talking specifically about that. But if for some reason they realize that we cannot pay all as a goal, so that they will have to face it, why give us about half of it at this point? Why not face it over 5 years? Take 30%. Later on, when we have a program, a timetable, next year we'll go to another 30%. Why charge it? So if the government has anything, if the government thinks about the people, then at least, if you are 155, give yourself 5 years. That gives you 30% a year. You can probably absorb that.
Again, looking at the last part of the statement, he said, money does not solve all problems. Thinking does. What exactly do you mean?
I will repeat that.
It says, money does not solve all problems. Thinking does.
No, what is the money that does not solve all problems? For example, in the institution sector, we have inefficiencies. In the water sector, 48% of the water that we produce go with. That is unaccounted for. And then when it comes to even collecting those that we can account for, we are unable to collect about 25% of these things. When it comes to the electricity sector, the same problem prevails. So it means that we, even as we look for solutions, we have to look at how to address the inefficiency side by side with increasing tariffs. But if you look at all the inefficiencies and you believe that if you are able to increase tariffs to a certain maximum, you're going to solve our problems, you're lying. The problems will stare in the face. You will still waste those income coming into the service because of the mismanagement. We need a radical shakeup in our existing services.
Mr. Oponkwusi, want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
David Oponkwusi is minority spokesperson on water resources. And having been able to get in touch with the Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations, Felix Ofosi Kwachi, for the government's reaction to the assertion of corruption in the country and issues of the increment in tariffs. Now let's read some of your text messages. And Napoleon from Sankofa Bay says the PPP should give us a break. When the founder of their party, Dr. Parker Sindum, was the minister during Kufuor's regime, what did he do about corruption? Zibo in Wenchi says Ghana, no fear and panic, no terrorism. Almighty Allah is still in control. Kojo Ekins in Tepco says PPP, as a political party on the street today, failed to convince us in totality with a solution to the problems that sent them to the streets. Gilbert in Quintampo says, may Professor Kofi Awunoso rest in perfect peace. And Mohamed Buziko from Yendi says, PPP would never come to power unless they stop their hypocritical demonstrations. And Lete Bao from Bayiri in the Sola Suna Kalma district says, demonstration is a legal right, but the question is, did it achieve what it intended to? Anyway, congratulations, the demonstrators today, because corruption in our country is having a higher degree. Many thanks for your text message to our earlier story where thousands of supporters of the PPP and other groups took to the streets today to protest against what they called the growing incidence of corruption in the country, saying that they can't trust President John Mahama's government to fight the canker. Now we are joined on the line by Dr. Evans Agridako, who is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana. Good evening, Doc, and you are welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for having me.
Well, Doc, some people are saying that the PPP demonstration today is to let people know that the party is still vibrant. Do you share that view?
Well, of course, once a party is registered and contested the last election, and you realize that they didn't perform badly, I don't think that they would need a demonstration per se to tell people that they still exist. In any case, I mean, as citizens of this country, many particularly as citizens of any country, one of the things that any serious political animal will tell you is that we have to be vigilant. And that is why Jefferson said that when the people are afraid of government, there is tyranny, and that when the government is afraid of the people, there is liberty. And so what is that as individuals within the state, people who have a stake in the destiny of the state must be interested in the happenings within the state. And so if any group of course, in political science, we will call it anomic behavior, but nonetheless, it's part of the democratic, practices that if you think that some issues or some happenings within the system, whether it's a policy slippage or whether it's lack of proper monitoring or whether it's leakages or we have leakages within the system or whether people are exercising power capriciously or whether you think it's arrogance of power or insolence of office or whatever you consider to be a misnomer or issues we think that can be raised, and perhaps you may not have some, of course, the issues you want to raise on the floor of parliament, for instance, but you are not adequately represented there. You may want to use other channels, and demonstration will be one of the channels that any political actor may want to use to raise the public awareness about the happenings within the political system.
Would you then say that the demonstration really achieved its intended results and that they managed to drum home their call for government to fight corruption?
Well, the one danger, one of the dangerous things about corruption is that there is no witness, for instance. And we know who the giver and the receiver are all culpable, for instance. We know the added effect of corruption, for instance. We know that it fosters, if we are not careful, it fosters competition and corruption. We are likely to lose by way of the low quality of public service delivery, for instance. We know that it can affect the delivery of goods and services. It can affect the quality of projects executed. At the end of the day, you realize that if you are following, or if the system is or there's some perception of corruption in the system, what it does is that it increases the cost of doing business by and large. And so you realize that those who have the capacity to use positions or to use public offices to their personal advantage tend to gain, while those who are not in similar positions tend to do. So in effect, what I can say is that corruption, then if you are not careful, widen the gap, or inevitably widens the gap between the rich and poor and increases inequality in the system. And that also, by and large, affects the execution of, public projects and so on and so forth. So if there's, a perception of corruption, and we think that, not corruption alone, any issue that we think must be brought to the attention of the powers that be, the key actors within the state, for instance, the government. It's not a useless exercise. Of course, you expect that those who will go on demonstration will also provide some alternative measures. We have institutions that we have put in place to address issues of corruption, among others. Look, we are operating on a simple premise that human beings are not angels on earth. And that is why we build into the governance system a set of checks and balances, to prevent possible abuse of power and possible abuse of authority, so to speak. So, yes, when you go on demonstration, what you do is first, yes, you register your presence. That's important. Because political parties do not go on leave. You must continue to remain relevant. Put issues on the public agenda, for instance. And also, I tell the government that you are also watching. And so if we identify certain gray areas, we want to draw government's attention to those specific areas for possible,
from the PPP demonstration now. The NPP seems not to find itself out of their woes yet, and after a strong weather statement by a group calling itself the Patriotic Future of the NPP yesterday, calling for monies raised for the 2012 elections, the party headquarters this afternoon suffered another shock when some party supporters besieged the national headquarters of the party to express their displeasure against moves by the party leaders to go for early Congress. And according to the group, they are sure that Nana Akufo-Addo, the party's presidential candidate in the 2012 elections, will win the 2016, so there was no need for an early election. Doc, what are your views on these internal wranglings within the NPP, especially on the proposals to hold early Congress to elect a presidential candidate for 2016 elections or not?
Yeah, thank you very much. I think the party is going through it's like you go through an election and you are not successful, and then you have some internal wranglers, like, you know, pushing and choosing within the system, within the political party. I think that the party, after suffering two defeats, should not take panic measures. What is critical is a party to sit down, to do serious introspection, to look at some rethinking, reorientation, rejuvenation of a lot of things. The party, in the first place, must also look at, do some proper diagnosis of what went wrong, the key actors they themselves put in place, the various structures and how they worked, the issue of financing, the issue of loyalty of supporters, who and who played what role, for instance. In effect, the party must do a serious diagnosis of what actually transpired and then come to some informed conclusions as to what really accounted for a defeat. You see, in diagnosing any system, if the diagnoses are wrong, you are likely to put in place wrong remedial measures. And so I will say that the party should not take measures. What does the party constitution say, for instance, with regards to the election of key office holders within the party, national executives, among others, and bearers among others? I think one of the critical things is that if they are out of power, then I think they will elect the flag bearer 2 years, for instance, to the general elections, for instance. Has that changed? What has necessitated? Is it the problem? Has to do with the flag bearer, or the problem has to do with other, systems. I think the party must not rush into what I will call universal explanations. Universal explanations in the sense that we need to have other intervening variables, which perhaps explain the defeat of the party, the 2008 and 2012. And then when that is done, then put in place as media measures. For me, the way to go is not an early Congress to elect a flag bearer, but the proper diagnosis of what went wrong before you think about even who the leaders are going to be among others. Of course, I'll sometimes if you really will even want to undertake some root and branch reform or some reform measures will have to be instituted, you need some critical mind, some people who have the right attitude, right testament, the right competences to be able to, and people who will own the reform measure to steer the affairs of that political party. But that must be done in a very systematic manner, not in a haste and not in a rush, as to give the impression that when you are rushing into early Congress, the impression you are giving out there is that it's a leadership crisis. Or you think that maybe the flag bearer among the others. So that issue must be resolved, and what went wrong must be properly analyzed, and then we can proceed from there. Otherwise, it will be a panic measure which may have dire consequences.
Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us. Dr. Evans Agridako is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Behind the News is live on Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kufudia, and Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi. The failure to conduct district assembly elections in the lower Manyakobo municipality in the eastern region as a result of the boundary dispute between the people of Manyakobo and Usudoku in the greater Accra region has incurred the wrath of the Manyakobo Traditional Council. The chiefs and people of the traditional area have resolved not to pay taxes to the municipal assembly unless district election is immediately held. The lower Manyakobo Municipal Assembly is without elected members and has been run by an interim management team since 2010. The people, however, say they have had enough of this and have impressed on the Electoral Commission and the government to address their concern. And Isaac Tete is the Municipal Chief Executive for Lower Manyakobo, and he's joining us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Tete, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
How has the absence of elected assembly members impacted negatively on the administration of the assembly?
Well, thank you very much. And let me say that the absence of the substantive assembly members has affected us. In fact, it has given more work for my good self, management, and the nine-member IMC, and as well as the services such as, i.e., the health, education, and all that, because you know the functions of assembly members, apart from bringing grievances from the communities to General Assembly meeting and carrying same or solutions back to them. We've had a situation where we've not gotten substantive assembly members in each of the electoral areas, and we have the situation where municipal chief executive will be called when containers are full and have to be evacuated, when the slightest thing, people's issues that assembly members can mitigate, you have to get me in there solving it because we don't have them. And if you are to divide the nine membership among the 31 electoral areas we have, you can imagine the burden that comes with it. Apart from that, you know, districts are supposed to be assessed under the functional organization and assessment to vote to get district development funds to support other inflows like common fund and IDA. Last year, because we don't have assembly members, subcommittees were not in place, and so for that matter, that's aspects of the criteria for assessment, we couldn't perform. We scored zero because we were not having the assembly members over there. So we're losing funds already.
All right.
It has given me more job. My shoulders are full, and we have been doing this. And so it's a worry. Don't forget that assembly members need to do more publicity and advocacy for us so that dissemination of information will be very simple for us.
Now, the chiefs and people of the area say they are not going to pay tax to the assembly unless district assembly election is held in the area soon. What is your response to this call?
Well, in as much as we are worried about the fact that the dispute of Akusi, six electoral areas, being ceded to Dangbe West in the greater Accra region, has caused us this, and we don't have assembly members, and everybody from the overlord of the area, Nenesaki State the second, down to the last person, is worried about the fact that we don't have assembly members. It will be most unfortunate or very worrying, or to say it better, we'll be adding more insult to injury if we decided not to pay levies, tolls, and whatnot. Because, listen, it is clear in Article 462 of the decentralization law in sections 108 and 109 that clearly stipulates that even instigation of people not to pay tax is an offense, let alone not paying as enshrined in the section 109. I think that I don't want anybody to have brush with the law, and I think that it would rather worsen our case. And my humble appeal to the entire membership or the good people of Lower Manyakobo is that we are already worried. we are lagging behind in terms of certain inflows. We need to appreciate our IDF. We need to get more money to promote the local economy. With or without assembly, sanitation must be handled. The huge garbage gathered on Agumanya markets and within the drains and the entire municipality must be handled. Support for education, support for health, support for all other district substructures must be functioning. And so for somebody to say, okay, that in the absence of assembly members, we will not pay tolls and all that, I think that is unfortunate, because we are happy or by the virtue of the fact that an executive instrument that has put in an IMT place to function in the absence of assembly members. And so to say that you will not pay the law, I think it will be an infraction of the law. People who have brushed with the law, it will actually worsen our plight and it will not send us anywhere. And so we only call in the EC to come over and conduct the electoral commission when budgetary allocations are made, so that peace and tranquility will strive. We hope that people would, the chiefs and people, having declared this, and I'm worried about the fact that we want to govern ourselves. Self-govern, already as a country, we are governing our own self. And the system is interwoven and interlinked and is connected, that the Regional Coordinating Council oversees Lower Manya. We have a representation of somebody as a member of parliament.
Very well.
In there.
Very well, Mr.
His Excellency the President is working with us. And so you cannot just insulate yourself on the fact that we don't have assembly members, and so you will be there alone.
Many thanks for your time with us. Isaac Tete is it?
My pleasure.
Isaac Tete is a municipality executive of Lower Manya Krobo. And also joining us on the line is Ebenezer Okulete Tailabi, who is the MP for Lower Manya Krobo. Good evening, Mr. Tailabi, and you are welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Well, how worried are you over the absence of elected members in your municipality?
Well, it's a bother to all of us. You know, it has been a problem. But you see, the problem, you know, did not just come from, you know, the assembly, but was because there was a problem, you know, that had to do with the demarcation of our boundary. And this was solved, you know, it was settled at High Court somewhere May 2012. So, in fact, this has been a bother to all of us, because without the assembly, we've had a lot of problems. But then, you know, the government, in its wisdom, set up an interim management committee, which has been the affairs of the assembly for now. So, you know, our only problem, as I'm sure you know, is that we just want the EC to get some money and then come down and conduct the elections, and I think there will be peace in the area.
You said that you've had a lot of problems in the area, and the municipality executive just said the situation has really affected the development in the area to some extent. But what steps have you taken to have those problems addressed?
Well, the first thing we did was to make sure that we settled the issue. The boundary issue was settled, and that was in May 2012. And then we spoke to the institutions that are supposed to take care of and make sure that the election comes from. The local government minister, the presidency, and recently, you know, a letter was written from the presidency instructing the electoral commission to go ahead and conduct elections in the constituency. So for now, we are only waiting for the EC to come and conduct the elections there.
All right, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Ebenezer Okulete Tailabi, the MP for Lower Manya Krobo. Christian Owusu-Pare is the Acting Director of Public Affairs of the Electoral Commission. He's joined the discussion. Good evening, Mr. Owusu-Pare, and you're welcome.
Good evening to you. Good evening to your
guests. What might have caused the delay in conducting digital assembly elections in the Lower Manya Krobo municipality for a long time?
Well, thank you very much. If listeners will recall, when we were preparing to hold the street level elections across the country in 2010. Maniako Border State was one of the issues that we're considering for the district level elections. Unfortunately for us, there was a problem with the placement of some electoral areas that used to be part of the Lower Maniakobo District under the Dangwe West District. That was when the legislative instrument 1983 was being prepared. Indeed, those electoral areas had for a long time been the Lower Maniakobo District. But unfortunately, the parliamentary stock on subsidiary legislation placed those electoral areas under Dangwe West. And this didn't go down well with the people of Lower Maniakobo. And because of that, they barricaded our office and made it impossible for us to operate from that office. Indeed, they insisted that until the placement was reversed, they were not going to allow us to hold the elections in the Lower Maniakobo district. And so the rest of the matter is that we're not able to hold the elections there. After the elections, the matter was taken to the Supreme Court for determination, and the Supreme Court ruled that the area properly belonged to Lower Maniakobo District. But that was in June 2012, at the very time when we were preparing for the presidential and parliamentary elections. It has never been the practice that we hold district-level elections together with general elections the same year. If you recall, that was the time when we were preparing the biometric voters register, and we didn't even have a register that could be used for that election. So we thought it was history to have the general elections, and then we can think about holding the district-level elections in the Lower Maniakobo District. And that is why the elections have not been held until this time. We've been having consultation with the Ministry of Local Government and with government generally, and the agreement was that the elections should be held. So we prepared a budget for the elections, which we submitted to government sometime in July this year, and we're waiting for releases of funds so that we can go and hold that election.
So how soon are we going to, or how soon is the EC going to hold elections for them? Is it till the funds are released to the EC?
Yes. You know, we will need the funds to be able to operate. And as I speak with you, let me say that we have already revised our program twice. Indeed, our original intention was to have the election take nomination sometime in September and probably have the elections this October. Because we didn't get the funds that we needed, we had to reschedule taking up nomination for sometime today and then probably hold the election as early as the first week of November. But we still don't have the funds, and so we are unable to follow that timetable. So a lot will depend on the time that the funds are released to the commission for the holding of the election.
All right, and Mr. Osupa, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Christine Owusu-Pari is the Acting Director of Public Affairs of the EEC. Let's quickly read some of your text messages. And Bill Yaya from Tumu says, CPP all the way, keep it up. Balara Abdullah says, internal wrangling within the NPP will mar the beauty of condolences they got from Ghanaians after the Supreme Court verdict, which can't sway floating voters away from them come 2016. Wisdom says, good evening, Agatha. More grease to your elbow for the excellent work you are doing. Many thanks. This one also says, the angry youth of the NPP must exercise restraint in their quest to press home their demand. They must refrain from engagement in the media. Photos also says that Dr. Indom is the right person to help the government to fight corruption in the country. Jokwaki from Bali, Ghana government should look at education once again as one of the keys for developing a nation. Awini Moses from Binaba says, we cannot stop corruption on this earth because it is from nature. And Nyaka in a diary says, the NPP would die before 2016. Jesuit Rashid Wan says, the best way to demonstrate is to convince Ghanaians to join PDP come 2016. Eric from Mantesim says, may God give us the grace to endure the hardship which the proponents of the Better Ghana agenda have inflicted on some of us till 2016. Zach from Damongo says it seems the government lacks the competence to fix the problems of the country. There are so many things not going on well. Ghanaians must wake up. And authority from Kachi says increment of utility tariffs should be tackled gradually. Abdul Fatal says the leader of the PPP is one of the visionary leaders Mother Ghana is looking for. And Monica Kons in Avongo says the poor turnout at the TPP's demonstration is a sign that their propaganda against the government will not fly. And Odenke in Nkoko says both NDC and NPP are taking us for a ride. Each would only see the wrongs in society when it finds itself in opposition. God save Mother Ghana. And Ahmed Echef Namamfum says, kudos to behind the news crew for their good work. We are very grateful and many thanks for your text messages. This is where we end tonight's edition of the program. George Kwaku controlled the sounds, and my producers have been Christopher Sedu, Edmund Pepe, Phoenix Kofi, John Poby, and Celestina V. Na Jagle Ago read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samuel. Many thanks for staying tuned.